I'm gonna be sick.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode, Season 10, Episode 4, A Fine Mess. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello. This title is half right.
First, a correction from our last episode, because a lot of people called me out, that I messed up when Kelly said she wrote Dylan's recommendation. She did say that, and I somehow still heard that she wrote Dylan's essay. I take it very seriously, only criticizing Kelly for the things she does. So I apologize to everyone who doesn't follow us on social media. The record had been corrected there, but now I'm correcting it here as well. For once, Kelly wasn't completely worthless. Dylan was the one who was completely worthless writing the bad essay, so let's all hate him instead.
And the admissions officer was a bitch about it, and we loved it, and that's what's important.
Ugh, so sad we don't get to see him again. Anyway, enough about last week. Let's talk about this week. Starting with our C-plot, Dylan's done shacking up with Gina. Dylan is writing a paper on his chunky-ass MacBook when a call comes for Gina Kincaid's room. It is Bobby, although we don't hear her, so they didn't feel like paying that actress this week, I guess. Gina is vague about what happened with Donna's apartment, but off a glare from Dylan, hangs up, not before mentioning that the bathroom floors are heated, which, make a mental note, Dave, because that is something I want in our new house. Anyway, once she's off the phone, she starts cozying up to Dylan, ignoring all the signals that she is bugging him, and finally he comes out with it, saying they never really talked about moving in together, which is not the way I remember it. I think they did have a conversation about it, actually.
I think they did, too.
I mean, hers was sort of assuming, but still, he didn't say, like, yeah, no, find another place. So, shut up, Dylan.
Yeah.
But since that time, he has decided he's not sure his place is big enough for both of them. And apparently they don't resolve anything, because the next morning, Gina's excited to wheel in a big room service breakfast order. She has also brought him the paper and is excited for him to read her an article about the Millennium New Year's Eve for some reason. Like, read it yourself. Weird. So Dylan much less gently declares that this isn't going to work. Gina testily says he's not trying, which he denies. He doesn't want to mess with their relationship. She even more testily guesses he's kicking her out to prevent problems. He claims they're also on top of each other. She demands to know the real reason he's evicting her. He claims he's not evicting her, but rather than wait for whatever pedantry he's going to offer to absolve himself, she covers her face with a pillow and things are unresolved some more. So their storyline kind of crosses over with David's, but this is more about them than him. So Gina ends up at the Peach Pit after dark, whining to David about how immature men are. And David says this, clip two.
Not all men, Gina.
Oh, all the way back then. Still a shitty thing.
Oh my God. I mean, the David is the worstness only snowballs from here, but how classic.
Yeah. And also, I mean, all men on this show, I'll just say it, other than the dean of admissions, all men.
Yep.
So Gina mournfully admits that she knows Dylan is trash, but she still thinks he's sexy. Relatable. And David decides this is a lesson he needs to share with his stupid listeners in clip three.
Listen to me, all right? Women love jerks. Take my friend Doug, for example. He steals this girl away from his roommate, asks her to move in. She says yes. He gets sick of her, kicks her out. She loves him more than ever. He wants service with a smile, and guess what? She gives it to him.
Moron.
What the hell is your problem?
Huh? You know, Dylan, a simple thank you would do, all right?
For what?
I just turned you into a folk hero.
Tell you what, David, you do not discuss my personal business on your little radio show.
You know what I just realized? Me talking about what a jerk you are is actually making me a star. And I should be thanking you. My God, Dylan, I'm sorry. Thank you.
L-O-L.
I mean, they're both...
A star! okay.
They're both awful. It's so hard to pick a side, but not really. David is the worst. Like, someone get some bleach and clean up this shit stain, because it's enough already. I mean, I'm so mad that it doesn't happen in this or the next episode. Like, he continues to believe his own bullshit about being a star on a college radio station.
Especially when his hair is, like, it's even inkier and is styled in this weird, like... It's like someone threw Brandon's shelf head and a Jughead cap in a blender, dumped a bunch of super black hair dye in there, and then just dumped it on David's head from above and then put gel in it. Like, fuck you. Just fuck you.
Yeah. It's really, I mean, you can see it in the visual aids. It's very bad. He will get a comeuppance of sorts, but it'll be in the B plot, so stand by. The next day, Dylan is graciously helping Gina check out rentals in her price range of ? Literally, what is her income? Don't know. Anyway, she gets frustrated and tells Dylan she doesn't want his help. And the next day, she's even more frustrated about the prospect of living on wall-to-wall shag carpet in Reseda. And from here, they get braided in with David, so we will come back to them. In our B plot, more people than usual are having a bad time at the club. So David.
It's really noteworthy.
And his dumb hair and his shaggy from Scooby-Doo pelvis forward posture, which I made a gif of. You can see it in the visual aids. It infuriated me. Are descending upon the radio station that for some reason employs him. The receptionist thinks he's gross and is correct in clip four.
The guy from the After Dark. The one who says that all women secretly wish to be one of Charlie's angels.
Hey, there he is, number one with a bullet.
Hey, yeah, we're doing pretty good, right?
Good. You, my friend, got guys calling in by the truckload. Hey, I wouldn't date a feminist if I were you. But who would? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
What feminist would date David? It's not a problem. Like,
what non-feminist would date David?
That's
it's David.
True. Ugh. But of course, this just cues David to try to defend himself and the receptionist, whose name is Robin, to read him for filth even more in clip five.
You know, I think you might have the wrong impression of me.
Oh, I know. Because if I got to know you, I would see that deep inner pain that causes you to be such a jerk on your show.
Exactly. I have a meeting, but if you write down your number, I'll give you a call and... And you can judge for yourself. Plus, you've got a little bit of a Jacqueline Smith thing going on. I kind of like it.
I'm gay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how the station manager has gotten the idea that Robin is a feminist, because somehow this play works on her and I'm furious.
Yeah. And why does she give him the correct phone number? Like, this would be an excellent place to give him a comeuppance. But of course, the show thinks that he's being charming and interesting.
And thinks that
incel.
Women do think this is interesting, which no. But anyway.
Arf.
So Donna shows up at the Walsh house with a demo for a band she thinks Noah should book at the club the next night. Now, I have never booked bands for a club, but I have booked our podcast, Extra Hot Great, where we have guests, and I know you can't ask someone the night before. Never mind a band. Like, how are you even going to get the word out that they're there if you're getting, like, there's no promotion for them? This is so stupid. I can't believe I care, and yet I do.
And then this is all part of a storyline in which basically they're back together, which,
yeah,
okay, but, like, when did that even happen?
Right.
It was like, yeah, well, it didn't work out with these other two non-gang losers, so I guess we're back together.
Right.
Hing. Like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah. Noah flirtily agrees to play the demo and is heading for the stereo as he asks how she heard about this band. And she evasively says she thinks a customer mentioned them. But then they're setting up the club the next day and thanking Noah for giving them the opportunity. And the chit-chat leads to the revelation that the lead guy's cousin is Wayne. One of the aforementioned non-gang idiots.
Yeah, remember him?
Uh-huh. And that according to this guy, Wayne is a total dog. Ruh-roh. So that night when Donna is innocently making conversation with Noah about the band, he bites her head off for failing to disclose the Wayne connection. And she actually sticks up for herself and for once doesn't apologize at all. Growth? Question mark? It won't last, but still, I'll take it for a second. Elsewhere, fucking David calls Robin and asks her out live on the air without her consent. In fact, with her explicit non-consent. And she ruins things for women everywhere by acting like this violation is adorable. And the smug faces he makes in this scene are really, truly horrendous. I only clipped one for the visual aids because I couldn't stand it. But it'll give you an idea of what,
same,
what we're looking at.
Maximum punchability, oof, truly.
The next day, stupid Donna finds Noah coming out of his gym so that she can, you guessed it, apologize about the band. She didn't want to hurt his feelings. And she's embarrassed about what happened between her and Wayne and is equally upset about what happened with Noah and Charisse, which he notes was after they broke up. She agrees that's true, but it still hurts. And Noah and Donna agree they need to forget these other idiots and focus on each other. on the idiots in front of them now, I guess.
Great idea.
Yeah. For their date, David has brought Robin to the club to give her some very suspect spin about the incel radio hour in clip three. clip six.
So that's where your whole radio bit comes from.
Pretty much.
You as a loser.
Well, in high school, I was 5'4". I had really big hair, much bigger than it is now, an extremely high voice.
So you were the trusty, reliable best friend.
I just thought my listeners would appreciate a few tips on avoiding the I love you, but I'm not in love with you speech.
See, now I just don't see anybody giving you that speech.
Oh, that's good. You want to dance?
You know, is this part of the whole routine? I mean, you know, rule number one on first date, tell sob story.
No. Rule number one is make her feel like a queen. The whole dweeb story is optional.
If I may, first of all, the saxophone in the background sounds like one of those like sex therapy home videotapes.
Yep.
You're like, take hands with your partner. Really focus on your breathing.
Gross.
Like, lol.
Stop.
Also, the reason no one would give him that speech is because he's completely unlovable on any level because he is Lord Pissface, King of the Incels.
It's true. But I appreciate that the writers did remember what he was like in high school, although it's not like his voice is especially deep now, so I don't know why they called out that detail. Maybe secret neg of current day Brian Austin Green,
I mean,
perhaps.
We did just see the like standy cutouts of him.
Oh yeah.
Like last week, right?
Right. Ugh, I think whatever. It was the week before it last, but yes, recently.
It all runs together.
It sure does. Anyway, David is so good at slow dancing that Robin wants to make out in the middle of the floor. Oh, Robin. The next night, she calls to wish David luck on his show. Like, we are way past luck, dear, but nice try. And he's still on with her when suddenly his boss is on site for some reason, dying to hear the story of how his date with Robin went. And David states that he's not going to talk about it, which his boss thinks is a joke. And then Robin on the phone cheerily says she wanted him to know she'd be listening. So David is in quite a pickle. But elsewhere, Noah and Donna make peace like the couple of dopes they are, and disgusting kissing ensues, the only kind they know. And David ends up barraged with calls from nosy listeners wanting a payoff to his date story, which he tries to dodge, but ultimately can't, as we hear in clip 7.
Doug, what's up, buddy?
Doesn't feel good being on the other end, does it? Having people talk about you.
Or are you just not answering questions because the date was a bust?
Doug, I'm not answering questions because it's nobody else's business.
In other words, you crashed and burned, huh, tough guy?
No.
So you scored. Or is it
a question of those who can do and those who can't just talk about it on the radio?
You guys want to hear about my date?
No.
Fine.
No! Oh, no! Beep, beep, beep.
Oh, no!
Oh, no!
Thank you. <Yeah. laughs>
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, again, I don't particularly care to side with Dylan on this or anything else. And yet, the incel radio hour has left me no choice.
And I appreciate that the show is kind of like acknowledging without hanging a lantern on it that the reason that Dylan knows how to push his buttons is because he's known David so long. I mean, not that it's hard, like David is not complicated, but still.
Yeah.
So we don't get to hear whatever he said on the radio, but he returns home after his show to a furious message from Robin. And you can see this in the visual aids, but we're supposed to think he grabs this, like, not even a cookie jar. It's like a cookie vase and holds it while he's listening to her message. And we're supposed to think that a single 24-year-old man buys, like, commercially produced cookies. These look like some kind of Pepperidge Farm jam jobby. And then decants them into a cookie vase. Like, I don't believe that.
Do you remember Petra's Farm jam jobbies?
Yeah, anyway, you'll see that in the visual aids in case you care to ID whatever kind of cookie that is.
Surfing the dark web and complaining.
And there they were. A whole crate of Petra's Farm jam jobbies discontinued in 2017. But now I have a whole box of them. Thank you. I love jam jobbies.
It's the only job David's going to get.
Dave, why would you bring up discontinued cookies the year of our no famous chocolate wafers? Why?
Oh my God. That's right.
They still are back on shelves, by the way.
The quest continues.
Although I did go to the Nabisco Facebook page and find out that they were like they were pulled from shelves. Because of a weird odor in a batch, and they still have not gotten back. This is 2014 Excedrin all over again, but I digress.
The cookies, they're made from monkey cum.
Well, get some monkeys, because I wanted to make a wafer cake. Anyway.
That was a Kitchen Hall brain candy reference for those that think I'm just talking about monkey cum out of the blue.
It's different from his usual talking about monkey cum, but I've taken us way off track. Gina comes back to the
suite. Look, my gallons spinning of monkey cum in the back room are no business of our listeners.
What listeners? They've all
bye, everybody.
Precious monkey cum in the back room.
All right, shut up. Gina comes back to the suite, spinning out about the apartment she just took in Reseda, but Dylan has good news. He wants her to stay at the hotel, and he made all the arrangements. And she is so excited not to have to live in Reseda that she doesn't hear the words he's not saying and is thus surprised to learn that his solution is he's going to pay for a second room for her to live in without him. And he thinks it's cute that he signed her in as Mrs. McKay, but she is appalled that he would do that for the room she's going to live in without him. She says she makes it makes her feel cheap, but she also does not say she won't take it. So she is still Bobby's daughter, I guess. And
also, isn't his whole, is this the episode where we see that his rationale for this is that he has to write, or is it next episode?
That's next time.
Okay.
Also, yeah, so get ready to barf about that, everybody. On to the A-plot. Opinions on marriage are a land of contrasts. So the dude brain trust minus Matt has gathered at the Walsh house to opine about why Janet turned out Steve's proposal. Noah thinks it's because Steve didn't have a ring. Dylan thinks it's that he didn't get down on one knee. And the conversation goes on from there in clip 8.
I have actually been married, Steve. Listen to me. Supplication is the key.
She's lucky to have him.
They're lucky to have each other. Remember that.
Ask, get ready to beg.
If she smells fear, you're through.
You clear on all this, Steve?
Oh, yeah. Real clear. You guys have been a tremendous help.
Please
shut
remember
up, David. Shut up.
Yeah, but also please remember later that Dylan said they're lucky to have each other, because that's not really how he acts. Anyway, at the girls' apartment, Matt is loitering by a window while Kelly and Donna both seem to be trying to talk Janet into accepting the proposal, even as they both agree it was lame. Janet doesn't have time for Steve's ambivalence, and Matt backs her up, saying that marriage is hard enough even when both people are into it, at which Kelly gives him a look as though she did not call off her own wedding in her gown at the fucking church. Like, does Matt even know that? Because that is important information.
Yeah.
And anyway, Matt leaves, and Donna says Janet's baby needs a dad, and I guess because she's Catholic and a moron, it hasn't occurred to her that the baby could have a dad whether his parents are married or not. Back at the Walsh house, Steve shows off the ugly ring he has acquired since Janet turned him down.
As Sarah noted
in the file name of the ring, it's ugly, like they're all ugly. It is, like, and they are.
Yeah.
But they make him practice his rap on Noah, and he does, getting on his knee and everything in clip 9.
Janet, I know we've been through a lot,
And I know you're worried about my commitment. But I think you're the most incredibly ugly, hairy knuckles I'll never be able to
work at all.
This,
dude, you're horrible.
We need you're in there, Romeo. Yeah.
I with the improv, guys.
Yeah, stuff.
And Janet gives Kelly and Donna lists of all the classes and planning that she has specced out on her calendar,
including
they try to bring the
bunting. Hey, buddy.
They
this is where I'm a Viking baby storylines. But
they try to bring the subject back around to Steve, and Janet admits that if it were just her, she would take him back, but that the baby shouldn't have to deal with his indecision. And the guys' conclave breaks up with vague promises from everyone that things will work out for Steve. After the credits, Kelly and her dumb hair, which you can of course see in the visual aids, it's real dumb, are waiting in the courtyard to pick a fight with Matt about his stance on marriage, which she kicks off by giving him her cheek when he goes in for a kiss, and yet again a second time when he quasi calls her on it. Basically, because Janet is sticking to her previously stated position regarding Steve's proposal, Kelly blames Matt. Conveniently for Matt, they are interrupted by the arrival of Matt's client, an angry woman listing her many grievances against her ex-husband. Matt sends the client upstairs to try to defend himself to Kelly, who is being ridiculous in clip 10.
Perfect example of what I'm talking about. Married 17 years to her high school sweetheart. He was the quarterback, she's the cheerleader. They both thought it was going to be forever.
Nearly half of all marriages end in divorce. That doesn't mean people shouldn't get married.
I didn't tell Janet not to marry Steve. All I said was for her to be cautious.
Oh, that's a ringing endorsement.
My experience tells me not to believe in forever, and that's all I was trying to say.
Well, you picked a bad time to say it.
I kind of wish Matt had said something like, isn't your mother current, who is multiply divorced, currently living with her ex-husband? Just wondering. Like,
yeah.
there are lots of ways for couples to be, and you have experienced that in your own life. Why are you being this narrow-minded?
Yeah. Also, like, he's like, well, my client's waiting by. Of course, he doesn't stick the landing because it's Matt. But I mean, I just don't understand. Like, I do understand. It's because the show is not good. But it's
right.
Like, either the writers cannot remember what happened to core characters not that long ago,
right,
in showtime or real time, or they can make these issues ongoing and never resolved in this couple with like varying stances each week, or the couple can evidently hate each other. Like the actors can evidently have no use for each other.
Mm-hmm.
One of those things, maybe, but all three of them is like, why are we fucking watching this?
Right.
Who cares?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Matt said, because of my experience, I'm never going to get married again, which he would be justified in doing, but he doesn't even do that. Like, she's just being mad to be mad. It's very obvious.
Yeah, as usual, which,
right.
Why? Why, Matt? Why?
But furthermore, like, at the time when his ex-wife was, or when, I guess now ex-wife, was around, like, he was acting like his marriage vows were the most important thing, you know, not counting the part where they were apart for 3 years because she was like institutionalized. But like in his mind, as we were, it was portrayed at the time, even in the total mess that storyline was, that he was like, well, I made a vow and so now we're married. Like I think this is what you were alluding to. He's already shown like he can make a commitment and take it seriously.
Yeah.
So like. Again, she's mad to be mad and it's dumb. So I guess because Dylan has been married before, he feels it's his place to summon Janet to his hotel suite and express his views in clip 11.
We might as well just get right to it because I know you want to talk about Steve.
Actually, I don't want to talk about Steve. I want to talk about you. I think what you're doing is wrong.
Fuck off forever. No one asked.
Well, really. I mean, I also think what she's doing is wrong, but like, you work here, Dillwig. This is just a contrivance. Don't get involved. It's just dragging it out.
Yeah. Janet correctly says she doesn't need this right now and is about to leave when Gina comes back. But then Dylan just kicks Gina out and goes back to telling Janet what he says no one else will, that she is being selfish. I don't think We've seen these two have a one-on-one conversation before, and this is how he wants to kick off their relationship.
And on top of that, there's like an extremely long, awkward, pointless sequence of stuff where Gina is like nearby and being awkward and intruding and then like eating cereal, not really out of earshot, but sort of out of earshot. And it's like, what is this for? Just cancel the show, please.
Yeah. But
you don't have enough material for a full episode. Just stop.
The scene goes on, alas, in clip 12.
I gotta tell you, I wouldn't have blamed Steve if he ran away, but he did not run away. He stepped up because you asked him to.
I have to go.
Janet, you got no right to do this.
And you have no right to do this.
Word.
Yeah, it's terrible. I can't believe that they, like, that they gave this to Dylan, who, like, barely cares about Steve at the best of times. Like, this suddenly out of nowhere, like, it, you know, your child must be raised in wedlock turn for him is ridiculous.
Yes. And the like men's custody rights fig leaf.
Uh-huh.
Ugh. No thanks. Where's the where's your French kid?
Right.
He's probably in probably in grade quatre by now. How's that going, dickhead? Uh-huh.
So Steve is compulsively practicing what he's going to say to re-propose to Janet when she shows up at the Walsh house and knocks on his door. When he's invited her into his room and sat her down, she announces that he would like him to stop sicking his friends on her. He doesn't know what she's talking about. She says she doesn't want to be pressured into changing her mind. And Steve just says he's sorry they overstepped, instead of that they were not doing it on his orders and he didn't know about it because, as far as we know, they weren't and he didn't. But whatever.
All right.
She then gives him a detailed schedule of all the upcoming pregnancy-related events she's about to have. An ultrasound, for example, where she will find out the baby's sex. He whines that he doesn't want to know, and Janet briskly says he shouldn't come then. And he pouts about her finding out regardless of what he wants. Like, you don't share a hive mind. It's fine for one of you to know and not the other. Janet's about to leave when she remembers Steve was going to ask her something, but now he's so steamed that he doesn't want to anymore. He makes a classic Steve pouting face, which you can see in the visual aids. And she's like, whatever, and leaves. And Dylan has just finished telling Kelly and Donna how things blew up in Steve's room the night before when Matt's divorce client's ex comes storming through the courtyard to yell at her about her plan to seek sole custody of their kids. And for some reason, even though Matt is standing right there with his client, Dylan decides to try and get in the middle of things. But whatever, the guy eventually leaves and Matt suggests that his client go upstairs to wait for her ex to clear the area. And when she's gone, a bunch of idiots weigh in clip 13.
One of them have an affair?
No, just changed, drifted apart. Happens all the time.
Nothing lasts forever. So depressing. You have no idea.
It's just like a string of cliches that they strung together. It's like there was a bot.
Yep.
It's so depressing. You have no idea. Like, are you all even in the same room? This is so, oh my God.
Yeah. Also.
Also, mind your fucking business.
Yeah, none of this is about you. Ugh. Also, Donna's parents also split up briefly in the last season, and that doesn't come up either. Whatever. Mm. At the bar that night, Steve is getting more awful advice from his awful friends in clip 14.
I mean, Janet might have said yes.
Yeah, if I wanted her to dice my heart into shish kebab-like slices.
No, you didn't show her the ring. The ring is the money.
No, the only millions a girl wants from you are those little tadpoles swimming inside your shorts.
All right.
Tadpoles are the money.
Gross.
Also, what?
Did he say tadpoles are the money?
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm. The money. Mm-hmm. It's made from Steve cum.
This is terrible. Oh,
tadpoles are for closers. I just God.
Yeah, it's so stupid, but again, Noah gets one of those like once every five episodes good line readings where Steve is like, she doesn't care about that. It's all about the tadpoles. And Noah's like, all right.
Yeah. And while I'm up, this is such a complete and pointless, unwarranted character assassination of Janet. Free Janet.
Yeah. Speaking of whom, she shows up late to meet Donna and says that the crib wasn't delivered. She better just be keeping it unassembled in her room and not planning to impose her dumb baby on her roommates, one of whom is already a dumb baby, but still. Anyway, of course, Janet doesn't know that Donna has brought her there under false pretenses, but really to ambush her with Steve, who is super drunk, but still determined to propose, once again practicing putting the ring on Noah's finger. Unfortunately, Donna has maneuvered Janet over by the bar just in time for this, clip 15.
Janet, will you marry me?
You guys are great together. I don't want to be with Steve. Steve! Hi, Jan, look who it is. It's Steve.
No. Whoops. This was the plan. Maybe you should have told Steve to not get super duper drunk tonight. Just a thought. Anyway, the next day at the beat, Dylan is lecturing Steve about making his peace with being a single father because it's a chick magnet. Great. When Janet comes in
dumbass.
When Janet comes in to her workplace, fuck off, Dylan, for real. He actually does fuck off, leaving Janet to monologue about her love of neatness and order and her panic about the chaos and messiness that of her current situation and of Steve himself, though it ends with her saying she's so in love with him that it terrifies her. Steve thinks he sees an opening as she starts crying that sometimes she likes his surprises, but not at this point in her life, and he backs off again. And at the club that night, Kelly decides the middle of the dance floor is the right place to yell at Matt, both a child of divorce and divorced himself, about not believing in marriage like she does. He protests that not seeing marriage in his future doesn't mean the two of them have no future, and she grudgingly resumes dancing, pissily glaring at a happier couple who know how to have fun. Not just any couple, though. The woman is Matt's client, whose name is Judy. Matt is pleased to see her having a good time, but of course Kelly is a bitch about it and demands to go home, where Donna and Janet are frustratedly trying to assemble the crib, but they can't because they're women. Donna makes a very idiotic face that Sarah captured for the visual aids. Kelly comes crabbing in about Matt, but thank God even Janet's baby has had enough of her shit because it chooses this moment to kick for the first time. Janet and Kelly are both happily crying when Donna leads Steve in. And Kelly, considerately for once, asks Donna to have him wait, but Janet says she's okay and her roommates leave. Now it's Steve's turn to monologue, tearfully. And he does, railing against tidiness in clip 16.
Everything that's on that list, Steve, is important. Doctor's appointments, ultrasounds, all confirmed, all important, all scheduled.
Well, that must come as quite a relief for you. Yeah, you can find out the baby's sex and paint the nursery accordingly.
Yeah, well, I care enough to find out.
I care. I just don't feel the need to prove my affections towards my child to anyone.
I know.
I don't want to know because I want to be surprised. I want to stand next to you in the delivery room and squeeze your hand when the doctor tells us we're going to have a boy or a girl.
Spit it out.
And then I want to come home and I want to trip over that kid's toys and clean up his mess. His mess. Armas.
Oh my god.
And then maybe yeah. Later I want to step on his yeah.
His Legos.
Our Legos.
Our Legos.
As fake as that sounds, it looks so much faker. I cut a shot of like a couple of shots of Ian Ziering like, you know, mid scowly, ugly cry. And then like, as it's just sort of ramping up and whatever they put on his eyes to make him cry, makes them so pink. Like he looks fully stoned. They are so discolored. It is crazy.
It's just, oh my God. And then, you know, like if you're that compulsive about your life, Janet, maybe double bag the birth control.
Yeah. Duh.
I mean, I don't know. Just this needs to end. It's well, gotta end.
If you're that compulsive, you never start dating Steve. Like, that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
He cannot be that good in bed. He just can't.
No, it's true. Well, maybe he learned some things from Claire. I don't know. He could be.
I mean, he'd be enthusiastic at least.
True. The next day, Matt strategizes with Judy, telling her he wants to focus on her husband's temper. She states that he's a good man and a good father. And Matt will go in whatever direction she wants, but it's a custody fight and it could get ugly. She tells him that she and her ex are talking about reconciliation. Matt notes that he saw her out dancing with some other dude, inappropriate to bring up, but she confirms it, says their date was no good. What she and her husband had changed, but it didn't end, and now she thinks it's forever. And at the ultrasound, Steve bursts in just as her doctor is about to tell her the sex of the baby. He's ready for messy or neat or whatever and pops open the ring box as he asks her to marry him in front of the doctor, which is when I finally look it up and confirm that is the ex Mrs. Moonves once again playing the doctor.
Oh, no.
The social worker.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She's back in playing a different character. Anyway, Janet accepts the proposal and decides to go with Steve and not find out the baby's sex because it turns out there aren't enough surprises in life for Janet after all. Okay. Matt goes to the beach apartment to have a pleasant conversation with Kelly. No such thing. Her body language is so bitchy.
Oh, like, my God.
It's ridiculous.
And her jaw is jutted out so far and she's got so much cat butt happening. It's like... Just shove him off the balcony. That's clearly what you want to do.
Yep.
Break up. You hate him.
He has been thinking about Kelly's position on marriage, and because it sounds like he's coming around to her side, she rewards him with some baby voice. Lucky him. He tells her about Judy, and she checks that he's heard about Steve and Janet. Now that he admits he's surrounded by happy married couples, she's ready to kiss him again. Oh, lucky Matt. So Janet wakes up in the middle of the night to find Steve on the deck painting the assembled crib in the dark. Great idea. She cries as she apologizes for pushing him away and worries that he's going to figure out he married her for all the wrong reasons. But he has a surprise, a printout of their ultrasound in a very ugly frame. And that's where we end things.
Ugly sound. Oh, God.
Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. The fetus for kicking in order to shut Kelly up.
Yeah, it's pretty slim pickings. I'm going to go with Noah.
Yeah. Does get
he
that
was
one
sort
funny
of
line.
Funny, and he wasn't Dylan. So.
Yep. True. Least valuable player. I mean, Dylan is very bad. Don't get me wrong. And that's sitting Janet down or summoning her to come to his place so that he can lecture her is like horrible. And yet somehow Kelly is worse. Just picking fights to pick fights. It's really hard to watch and stupid.
David, it's not close.
Fair enough. Let's do the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to me.
5 ways from this episode, Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. I'm going to say it's dangerous for him to call Janet over because she could have killed him and I would have backed her up.
Yeah, ain't a jury in the land, etc. It's also bad to like relitigate your living situation with your girlfriend, not in her favor, and also possibly dangerous. It is Gina.
It's bad to let David know you listen to his radio show by calling in. Don't give him the attention he is desperate for.
I mean, I guess it's bad to, you know, call in and let him know that he's gotten to you. Also, I mean, I guess that's sort of the same thing as what you said.
Well, and he was mad, which is why he called. So let's say that makes 4.5.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good enough.
I'll do the last half for you here.
Okay, yep.
Shut up, Dylan.
There you go.
Yeah!
Oh, there's the music. Next time on Again With This, Steve and Janet's big announcement causes tension, bias, and stuff. Oh, my! And in the musical bedrooms game, touched off by Janet moving into Casa Walsh, nobody's a winner. Meanwhile, David incels out Robin live on the air. Old for the FCC, Commissioner. It's the visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. You can find them on our website. That's againwiththis90210.com. And you can follow the podcast on Twitter at AWT90210. I am first-time, long-time Sarah Doug Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Jacqueline Smith Thing, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. Our producer is Money Tadpole, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.